Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Wow, this night is going by quick. We had some breaking news last hour with Paul Berry III. Let me play this real quick. So Paul Berry ran for county executive up against Steve Stanger. Steve Stanger ended up winning that election. And now, with all of these legal issues and what seems like some pretty shady business deals going on, Paul Berry pops on and says,
Steve Stanger has 30 days. After 30 days, if Steve Stanger has not resigned, I am personally going to start a recall effort of Steve Stanger. And we will have him taken off the ballot.
Ooh. Could it be? What happens next? Very fascinating. So that's Paul Berry III, which you can find online now. If you go to KMOX.com/overnight, it was in the last hour. So if you were to go back online and you can listen to any part of the show, it'd be right there. You can also find it on your favorite podcast app by clicking that subscribe button, too, when you search for Overnight America. Help us out. Give us a nice review. 5 stars would be nice. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. Jordan Peele is on fire. He was one half of Key and Peele, the comedy duo that was on Comedy Central there for a while. Extremely, extremely creative and funny comedy duo. I mean, very, very funny. The skits that they would do and the things they would put together, I mean, it was hard to find anyone that was doing it better than they were when it came to that sort of put some comedy skits. And eventually the show ends. It was on Comedy Central for a number of years. Ended maybe 2 years ago. And then he started writing movies, apparently. Very popular there, too. He had that one movie that came out. I don't know what it was called. I haven't seen him, but I know he won an Oscar for it. So it's something that is well-received by his peers. And Hollywood Reporter was doing a write-up on a question-and-answer session of Peele. He was in town. He was in Hollywood or whatever it was. Let's see. It says, Jordan Peele, not willing away the hours at in a Universal lot, blah, 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 blah. So he was in East Hollywood and was talking to some other people about his craft of creating movies. And this is what the headline says from Hollywood Reporter. And I think this headline's a little sensationalized. Jordan Peele on making movies after Us. Us being in the quotes because that's the name of his most recent movie that's a hit right now in the box office. He said, quote, I don't see myself casting a white dude as the lead, end quote. That was the quote. I'm going to point out that I think Jordan Peele is incredibly creative, smart, funny, and he's actually given this great opportunity for him to go and tell stories, and he is just killing it right now doing that. When I read just that headline, I thought, oh boy, here we go. But I wanted to read it in its full context because I thought people were getting outraged just for the sake of getting outraged. And I want to ask this question to you, and if you're listening, do you think it's racist if Jordan Peele, who is African-American, he's, I think, the first person of color to win. There was a certain category he won that he was the first to do it. Number one, do you think that's racist? Number two, do you understand what he's saying? Or number three, do you even have a problem with him saying, I'm going to cast only African-Americans in the lead? Why? Because, and I'll read the full quote, and maybe you'll get a better context of why he's saying it. The number is 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. So let's read the full quote here. When asked the question, it said, okay, but there is this kind of power. Okay, here's what he said. He said, fame is still something he's figuring out. I don't envy someone who gets famous overnight, Peele cautioned. The hardest part of being recognized, I used to think that being in the public eye gave you power, but all of a sudden, they have the power and can come up to you an hour into dinner. But there are other kinds of power, and Peele plans on wielding, says one way is to keeping black faces on the screen in leading roles. or putting black faces on the screen in leading roles. Not blackface that we've seen where, you know, white people paint their face or whatever, but, you know, African-Americans in leading roles in movies. He said, quote, "The way I look at it is, I get to cast black people in many movies. I feel fortunate to be in the position where I can say to Universal, I want to make a $20 million horror movie with a black family. And they say, yes, it's a formula he's not interested in messing with." And that's what he saw, the lead in the last two movies that he's made. And this is where the quote everyone's taken out of context. It says, quote, "I don't see myself casting a white dude as the lead in my movie. Not that I don't like white dudes," he said, nodding to the moderator. He says, "but I've seen that movie." The line drew a loud applause and shouts of agreement. It says, "It really is one of the best, greatest pieces of this story, is feeling like we are in this time. A renaissance has happened, and provided the myths of the representation in the industry are false." So if you only take this one quote, and let me just read it to you one more time. The quote being that, "I don't see myself casting a white dude as the lead." The larger scale of this quote is, "I don't want to be like every other movie. I want to do something different. I want to do something you're not seeing in Hollywood." And you know what? If he's the one that casts, if he's the director, the producer, the writer, if he's the one that's doing all of these things, you know, I have zero problem with that. I have zero problem with him coming out and saying, "I have a vision for what my creation is, and I create these things specifically for a person of color to be the lead." I have zero problem with that. I don't think it's racist, and I think it's silly that everyone online is going crazy about it. I think it's crazy that they look at him and say, "Nope, nope, nope, nope. You're going to be forced to do one thing that we don't, you know, hey, we got to be all sensitive here. We can't say it. We can't say we have a vision of someone we want." Oh boy, you're telling me. Oh, can't believe you said that. You're such a racist. I just don't see it that way. I see he is writing specifically for a certain character. He's allowed to cast who he wants. He's allowed to portray his story in his creation however he wants. And you know what? That's perfectly fine with me. Zero problem. I don't see it as racist. I don't. What do you think? 314-436-7900. I get what he's saying. I don't have a problem with it. But do you? We'll take some of your calls. If you want to, you can text in too. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Local news from St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather station, KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. So this is the headline, and I think that the headline's taken out of context. It's just meant to get you to click on the article. Jordan Peele on making movies. Quote, "I don't see myself casting a white dude as the lead," end quote. That's what the headline says. So a lot of people are looking at that as racist. They have a problem with it, but do you have a problem with it? And if you missed the full context of the quote, I did it right before the break. 314-436-7900. You can call or text that. Or 800-925-1120, which is a good way for you to hit it, too, regardless of where you are. I mean, you were border to border. You could be sitting anywhere across the United States right now, and we can take your questions or comments on that. Let me go to Jack calling in. Hey, Jack, what's going on?
Hey, Ryan. I just wanted to ask you, if a white director had made that exact same comment, wouldn't there be a backlash on that because a white man said that, and wouldn't that be racist?
Maybe there'd be a backlash. I don't know if it would be. So this is what I was, because this point has been made online. And the point being is, let's say someone wrote a story and the member, the character of the story is a white male. And the person said, "We're going to cast a white male." We wouldn't say that's racist at all. If the person said, "Well, I wrote a story and the main character is a white male, so we cast a white male." I mean, I think the social side of things is like people get outraged when you do this sort of thing. We shouldn't be getting outraged. I mean, it's a story. The guy wrote it. He can do whatever he wants with that character. I don't think it should be racist.
But does he have to come out and say, "I will only cast a man of color"?
Well, if he's writing the story, then he's allowed to do that. I don't see that as racist. I can see how they could be spun that way, but, you know, I think the worst part of it all is that it is looked at as a racist thing. It shouldn't be looked at as a racist thing to me. I don't think it's I don't think it has to be any one way. Like, for example, too, we see this in the movies. Remember when Ghostbusters, the newest one, came out and everyone
sure,
said, oh, it's going to be so daring. We're going to flip the script. We're going to cast all women because you know, we're going to be edgy like that. We have to go to social norms. And what happened? The movie stunk. And they said, oh, it's because it was women. You hate women. That's, they always find ways to flip these things. And it's, you know what? I don't think people care as much. I think they just look at it for the art that it is, and they can make their own determination on it. And you know what? If you're the person that's creating the art, you have the ability to do that. We got to stop getting so outraged by all this stuff. It's driving me nuts. And you know what? Maybe this will be the first step where we can stop the outrage, but instead we keep it up anyway. I don't know, Jack.
I think that would be great if we could stop it.
It would be great.
But when a director comes out and says, I will not cast a white man, or if it's a white director, I will not cast a black man, I think that's wrong.
Oh, well, so let me ask you why you think it's wrong then.
Because I think, I mean, if you write the script for a black character, okay, like Denzel Washington, whom I love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cast him. But you don't have to come out and tell the media, I won't cast a white man in his role. If you remember the Train movie years ago, Unstoppable,
mm-hmm.
one of the best movies I think was ever made.
Hmm. What about, you know, like Tyler Perry? Yeah. Could you imagine we said this to Tyler Perry? Oh, you're no longer allowed to cast. If you're an African-American in the lead, no more Tyler Perry. Sorry, you got to stop it. Could you imagine if we tried to pull that on some of the other people that are writing these stories right now, some of the predominantly black directors that have had a lot of success in Hollywood?
But you don't have to come out and say, I won't cast a white man.
Yeah.
You can just cast, okay, I want, you know, so-and-so to be my star,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so on. You don't have to come out and use color and gender like this guy did.
Okay.
Is my point.
Very good. All right. Thanks, Jack. Bye.
Thanks, Ryan.
And I think Jack does make a point that a lot of other people are making online right now. Is it just because he said it out loud that makes it racist, or people don't have a problem with who you cast in these movies, I don't think, at least. But if you put it in the context, he's in a group setting where people are asking him questions, and he was talking about casting. And let me just read the full context of it again. I don't see myself casting a white dude as the lead in my movie. Not that I don't like white dudes, but I've seen that movie. He said, but I've seen that movie. It really is one of the best, greatest pieces of the story, is feeling like we are in this time. A renaissance has happened and proved that myths about representation in the industry are false. So he's saying that, here it is. He's saying that, one, I've seen that movie, meaning he doesn't want to make the same movie that everyone else has made. He wants to be different. He wants to tell a new story. He wants to tell an original story. Good for him to do that. My goodness, every other reboot, oh, we got to go back and find something that's already been told a million times because that's the only thing that's selling. You know, we got to do a 50th Star Wars movie and a 50th Marvel movie this year. Oh, my goodness, because that's the only thing people want to see anymore. Good for someone that wants to do something original, number one. And number two, he also says he wants to dispel this falsehood that if you only are a blockbuster hit if you're white or whatever it is. He gets this and he says, okay, I write this story and I'm starting to get some clout in the industry where I can write this script, go to Universal, and I can't be pushed around when they said, oh, you know, maybe you should change this and do that and da-da-da and get to this social norm and try to do this social justice thing. And, oh, how about you make this one LGBTQ? And how about you flip this one over to do da-da-da-da-da? You know, and they put all these notes in because they think it's going to help the movie. In the end, what you're doing is you're really squashing the art from the person that wrote it to begin with. And I don't think that has to do anything with race. I don't have to think that has anything to do with sex or gender or anything else. It's just the artistic direction of the person that made it. And they should have some sort of freedom to do that. And you know what? He's worked hard. He's proven he could be a success. He should be able to do those things. So that's the thing. I think the quote, I have no problem with it. It shouldn't be looked as racist. In fact, we should look at something like that and say in the future, nope, not racist. That has nothing to do with making, you know, a discrimination or anything like that. It's just that's how he wrote the character, and he's staying true to the way he wrote this character. That's it. That's it. Karen calling in. Hey, Karen, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Ryan. You got it spot on, and I'm just really glad that, you know, for the previous caller that you went back and repeated the line,
yeah.
I've seen that movie. Because Get Out, which was his first movie.
Get Out, that's what it was called, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a huge hit.
I do not like most, well, they kind of said it was like a horror movie, but it was more like highly suspenseful. It was, you know, just a quick synopsis of this guy who is black, goes home with his girlfriend to meet her parents for the first time over Thanksgiving weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. You know,
well, that's what people say. And you know what? When you go online, the ratings are spectacular. People gave it such high regard and high reviews, and it won all these awards. And they said, you know what? Where has he been this whole time that he can create an original story and do all of these things? He's super creative. So he gets another try at it, killing it in the box office right now. His movie's just doing phenomenal. So he's just saying, I have the ability to go and pitch my movies where I don't have to worry about them trying to change something. I can put my vision forward. That should be a good thing. I don't know why we're saying it's a bad thing.
Well, I think some people automatically always have to take, regardless of who says it, and flip it 180 degrees and say, well, if a person, you know, said it from this perspective, and he's a black dude. He was born black, and he sees things, you know. But the fact is, there are hundreds of horror movies or highly suspenseful movies. I mean, I like Alfred Hitchcock, so that's what it reminded me of, more or less. And they do have a different perspective, not because they're black, but because they're a unique individual.
Yeah.
And so let him express that through his directing and producing and stuff.
You imagine if someone went to Mel Brooks and said, in Blazing Saddles, well, this probably isn't good for you to cast an African-American here, because that could be looked at as too edgy. You should have two white dudes doing it. Could you imagine if we tried to always step in people's artistic direction all the time, what would happen? I mean, that's, you know, Hollywood and corporate and all these things, they always try to find ways to ruin it because they think it will push it in one direction or the other, and they might be able to make a couple extra bucks there. But you know what? We got to start listening to these creators. He's doing fine on his own. Let him do his thing.
Yep. But hey, Brian, I'm sorry, but I have to go because I have to get back to work. So
all right.
You get back to work. Keep listening.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I didn't see the first movie. You know, I have the first movie at my house. It's sitting because they send these screeners out. We're part of the Screen Actors Guild, and the SAG-AFTRA KMOX is one of the very few radio stations in the country that is actually union represented. And part of it, since we're part of this union, is that we get to voting. We get to vote on the Screen Actors Guild Awards. So they send these like little movies at the end of the year if you want to preview them to give you a better perspective of what you could be voting on. I don't watch them ever. They just send them to me and I don't watch them. I'm sorry. I don't vote. I don't watch. I don't do the movies, but I have a copy at home. I don't know. But people say it was great. Kyle texted in, Peele has proven to be creative and open in his honesty and cultural differences positively. And black folk have often been typecast negatively in horror movies. And he may be pointing out to change some of those images in a truism vision, ? So that's what Kyle texted in. I can see that. I can see that when you are someone that you realize there is an untapped market because it's always been turned down in the past and there hasn't been a person like him before to give this a try, that you'd want to do that. You'd want to be different and you'd want to be able to tell the story that you created. Absolutely fine with that. So Charles texts in, statement okay, but crazy. Okay. I don't think it's crazy myself. I think that statement is, you know, he was asked a question about it. He was asked, and he said, you know what? I think I've proven to these major film companies that this is a viable and lucrative thing for them to do. And yes, you know what? Do it. You don't have to be Tyler Perry, who self-finances or whoever it is. I don't know how he finances, but you don't have to be Tyler Perry to be the only person in Hollywood doing this sort of thing, you know? Kyle, is it the same as Jamie Foxx rejoicing over killing people? And I didn't see that one movie, Django something. It was a Tarantino film I didn't see, so I'm not familiar with that. I don't pay a lot of attention to movies in general. Goes to show you, some of the most popular movies out there I haven't seen. So, and I really don't care to see it anymore. It's just my tastes have changed over the years. I used to watch a lot of movies, but I think looking at this in general, and I'll just wrap this up because coming up next, we're going to talk a little space with space philosopher Frank White. This is really cool stuff. But let me just put this in general. It's a good thing that he said it. You want to know why? Because maybe we can stop with all this stupid outrage. We got to stop with this. Every time someone says something like this, we always try to twist it. We always try to find a way to be offended by everything that everyone says. What he said is totally innocent. He's the person that wrote and casts, and he has a vision. Let him do his vision. We shouldn't be outraged by this sort of thing. Stop with the outrage. That should be the point here. It shouldn't be, let's go online and, oh, I'm upset, because he said something about race. Stop it. We got to be done with this, all right? We'll be better off if we can just agree this is nonsense. We got to stop with the outrage stuff. All right, this is Overnight America, KMOX.
It's a new beginning. Get ready for the Cardinals season opener today. Ameren Total Access, 12:15. First pitch with John Rooney and Mike Claiborne at 1:10. The Cards, the Brewers. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Joining us now is a space philosopher, which I hope you have on a business card, also author of The Cosma Hypothesis, Implications of the Overview Effect. Frank White, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Yeah, how does one become a space philosopher?
You just decide to be a space philosopher. Actually, I spoke to my reunion class some time ago about becoming a space philosopher, and I confess they all knew that I really had not taken very many philosophy courses as an undergraduate, and I said there was a vacuum. We needed a new space philosophy, and I just decided to fill it. And that's really how it happened, to be honest.
So what do you talk about in your book, The Cosma Hypothesis?
Well, it does build on my first book, The Overview Effect. And The Overview Effect was about the experience of astronauts when they go into orbit or go to the moon. And they have a shift in awareness or a shift in identity because they see the Earth in a new way that none of us who have always been on the surface have really ever seen our planet in that particular way. So I coined the term Overview Effect and interviewed a number of astronauts for that and reported on their experiences. And from that, and while I was writing that book, we had the Challenger disaster.
Mm.
And there was the TV program This Week with David Brinkley. And George Will said to Tom Wolfe, who wrote The Right Stuff, it seems that we're justifying space exploration in a rather banal way, like nonstick frying pans. And Tom Wolfe said, you're right. This country has never had a philosophy of space exploration. That was the vacuum that needed to be filled. I realized it was totally true.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole mentality was around beating the Soviet Union to the moon. And yet what I was discovering was that there was this fantastic new understanding of our place in the universe, and yet our understanding of what we were doing in outer space hadn't changed a lot. Well, I set out to create that philosophy, and then this new book focuses more on the astronaut experience of the entire universe.
We're at the point where we're ready to go back to space, too. Vice President Mike Pence was talking about in the next 5 years the United States going back to the moon, and other countries have started to send rovers to the moon. We're sending actual probes to land on passing comets, which is pretty exciting. We have so much that's been done in space. I mean, we have the Juno probe, which has sent back some pretty exciting things when that was still active. And you also have the one probe that was sent to the sun that they got data back yet. I haven't seen any info on that in a little bit, but I mean there's a lot of things we're doing in space right now, even if it's not feet on the ground somewhere.
We're learning an enormous amount, and it's no longer just an American and Soviet, well, there is no Soviet Union, there's no longer American and Russian competition. It's now a worldwide enterprise. Mm-hmm. And that makes it even more important to have this new understanding of the why. And as I was pondering the why are we doing this, it became quite clear that all of our rationale had to do with human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the more profound results of space exploration still came back to humans. Even the overview effect does, in a way. It comes back to our greater awareness of our place in the universe. Well, what the Cosmo Hypothesis is about is, why would the universe, the larger environment, support something to happen on this planet, which is that after billions of years of evolution, we suddenly have a spacefaring species.
Mm-hmm.
We now can go out there and see not only the Earth, but the solar system and the universe itself in a new way. And my tentative conclusion is that we are creating life, intelligence, and self-awareness where it does not exist. In other words, we're helping the universe or the cosmos to become more intelligent, more self-aware.
Some people say we plant the seeds, so every time we send something out into space, we might be... Of course, you can't have a 100% contaminant-free anything anymore, but we might be sending some things somewhere that actually might plant something somewhere else that could, who knows, over time, grow into something else.
Yeah, and by creating space settlements and inhabiting, well, initially the solar system, we're definitely planting the seeds of life and intelligent life, because we don't know yet, for a scientific fact, we don't know if there's intelligent life anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe we're it, possibly.
Yeah. You know, and you're a space philosopher, and joining us now is Frank White. I come at it as there's no aliens, intelligent life in the universe. I feel like we're alone. That's got to be the question everyone asks you at first, right off the bat.
Yeah, and you're kind of in a minority, you know.
Yeah, I figured I was. I just think that there is... I'm still waiting for some of that evidence that would nudge me in the other direction. I think there's a chance of it. I just don't think there is. I feel that just looking at how we've advanced as a civilization over the course of 100 years, give someone a 10,000 or a million year head start, we would have had some evidence by now. And if there was, and even if there is intelligent life, let's say there is somewhere intelligent life, I feel like there's a barrier that would prevent any of us, just the vastness of space alone could be it, to communicate with each other, which would make it irrelevant if there was intelligent life or not, because at that point, if there's zero chance of us ever crossing paths, then it's as if there's not any other civilizations out there. So I feel like I side on that end, no aliens.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things to say about that. I was being interviewed by Fraser Cain, who's publisher of Universe Today recently, and he made the point that if we are, in fact, the only intelligent life, as you believe, what an incredible responsibility we have. In the sense that if we don't make it, if we don't avoid destroying this fragile spacefaring civilization, then we are not only going to, I don't know, become extinct ourselves, but that possibility of a more vibrant, lively, and intelligent universe goes away too. The other point too, and you made it just now, in doing research on this, it became clear to me that the way we're looking for intelligent life, other than sending probes, but the radio telescope effort, where we try to find signals, you have a very narrow band of time and space to start a dialogue, because as you point out, let's say that we discover intelligent signals coming from a star system, let's just say 1,000 light years away. So that means we received the signal and it left 1,000 years ago. And if we respond, it'll take 1,000 years to get there.
Right.
That other civilization will have evolved incredibly. We will have evolved incredibly.
They would have forgotten about the technology they even used to communicate at that point. Yeah. It's like finding some of these time capsules, and it would be like that, and people would have to be looking for it. Most of the time, you find it on accident. It's forgotten.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then the other issue is you would need to locate a planet that's not only close in space but close in time, because let's say they're 1,000 years ahead of us in terms of evolution, but they're close to us in terms of distance.
Yeah.
Again, that's going to be a very difficult communication. Think of us in our current time trying to communicate with people at the level of, let's say, the Romans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gee, they might think we're gods.
Well, sure. That's what a lot of people theorize. I love watching. It's weird that Discovery Channel turns into like Ancient Aliens. So they always say things like, you know, the aliens came down and helped build the pyramids. And, you know, they have their philosophies of how some of these civilizations were able to do the certain things they were doing. And they try to make the comparison of if aliens were to come down, that's basically it. He is a space philosopher, author of The Cosmo Hypothesis, Implications of the Overview Effect. It's a very technical title, but ultimately, it's a real fascinating look at a lot of things going on in space today. Author Frank White will continue our conversation with him. I want to throw at him some of the more wilder space philosophies out there and get his impressions of them next on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX.
Overnight America. I love talking space. It's just fun. Space philosopher Frank White joining us now with his new book called The Cosmo Hypothesis. You can find it on Amazon and his website, frankwhiteauthor.com. There's some really weird theories out there. Let me throw some theories at you. And just recently, Alex Jones was doing a podcast with Joe Rogan, and he said, back in the 60s, I forgot what universities were doing this, but they were giving psychedelic drugs to participants, and they were using those drugs as a way to communicate with aliens in order for them to send us technology. So they would put them on these drugs, people would communicate, they would come off of these drugs, they would basically give the message they said the aliens gave them, and that's how we had the big technological boom of the 50s and 60s. And there's so many wacky in wild philosophies out there. Do you try to look into each of these, or do you find yourself at a point where you're like, I don't have time. I can't even yeah. touch that one.
It's more the latter.
Yeah.
I think that some of the theories are interesting. For example, I find the ancient astronaut or ancient alien theories to be interesting because they do explain things that are difficult to explain otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that the gods of Rome and Greece and Egypt were actually physical beings who were more advanced than we are, or the people of that time were, it has a certain logic. It deserves attention. The idea of For example, the idea that we faked the moon landing.
Right. Yeah.
I don't get into it. I think it could be endless.
Or flat earths, things like that.
Yeah, things like that. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of astronauts who, if we fake the moon landing, I've talked to people who are part of the fakery.
Mm-hmm.
And I just choose to believe them. They seem to be people of integrity. And I would rather believe them than the theorists.
Yeah.
And for example, this whole thing about giving undergraduate psychedelic drugs to get communication from aliens, there's part of that I know to be true, which is the giving of the psychedelic drugs.
Mm-hmm.
The part about alien communication, I have no confirmation of that.
Well, of course, it's a conspiracy or whatever it may be, or that's super top secret. You know, I love looking into some of these, and joining us here is space philosopher Frank White. So we're sending, I think, a probe to Europa, and the idea is to try to dig underneath some of that frozen ice to see if there's anything underneath it, if there's liquid water, if there's... So things like that excite me. The Webb telescope, mm-hmm. I don't know where we're at. I think it keeps getting delayed. But upgrading the telescope from Hubble to Webb is a huge advancement, and the things that could come from that. Things like that are super exciting to me. What's the things that are exciting you?
Well, I'm like you. I think science is pretty exciting. The real stuff that we know is going on, like sending probes to Europa to confirm or deny the existence of life there. I would say right now there are a couple of things that excite me. One is the whole fascination we humans have with Mars.
Mm.
That's an interesting thing, and not just the probes and every plan we have to go there, including Elon Musk and his plan.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in why we're so fascinated with Mars, possibly because it's the only planet that makes a lot of sense for us to live on at this point, even though it would be hard.
Yeah, it's obtainable, and think of all the science fiction that's been written around it. So I think people like the curiosity around it, too.
I'm also getting more interested in the moon. And the reason for that is that going there, establishing a human presence there, is very much obtainable in the near term.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in response to Vice President Pence, or whether it's, you know, the European Space Agency is talking about an international village on the moon.
Huh.
There's a lot of talk about different ways to establish a collaborative human presence there. And the moon is only 3 days away, even with pretty old technology.
Yeah.
We can really do some experiments there in human adaptation. The other point, I was in a telephone conversation today with a group of people who are very interested in this. And I realized that from the perception point of view, well, I realized earlier from the perception point of view that going to the moon and looking at the Earth from the moon is very different than looking at the Earth from low Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized today is that the last time we saw the Earth and the universe from the moon was 1972.
Hmm. Interesting.
So I'm old enough that I experienced Apollo as a young person. So when I talk about Apollo, I'm pretty aware of it experientially, but increasingly you have to see that most of my audiences did not.
Yeah, I was too young for that. I mean, I was born in 1983, so I was someone that never experienced that. I missed out on the unbelievable images from the moon landing originally and what that meant for people. That's one of the rare once-in-a-lifetime type of opportunities, but, I mean, it doesn't mean another one couldn't come for the next generation doing something with exploration on the moon.
One of the things I'm trying to communicate to people, Ryan, is how exciting reality is. I mean, you know, we're about to start one of the great adventures of humanity, which is finally leaving the Earth.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll go ahead.
One other quick question for you, because I know we're running pretty long here. But Frank White, space philosopher and author of The Cosmo Hypothesis, you have a man cave, and you're only allowed to put one poster up in it. Would you do Neil Armstrong, Neil deGrasse Tyson, or Carl Sagan?
You know, I have a poster up, and I'd have to go with Neil Armstrong, I think.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I have a poster up. I have to tell you, I'm looking at a poster, and it's a picture of young children looking at the moon.
Yeah.
And it's from, I believe, the 25th Apollo reunion.
Hmm.
And it's signed by something like 10 of the Apollo astronauts.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a close race between Neil and Carl.
Yeah.
But you'll
go with Neil Armstrong on that one. You know,
I think so.
So if people wanted to pick up your book or wanted to explore a little more, where can they find The Cosmo Hypothesis?
Well, like everything, it's on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I do have a website, frankwhiteauthor.com.
Okay.
And I have a more or less trilogy of Overview Effect books that they can find there, including The Overview Effect and The New Camelot. I urge everybody to read all three, of course.
Yeah.
To be fully educated. But you can get all of them. I mean, you can find the links to the sales websites there.
You know, next thing you need to do is get your book on one of those weather balloons or whatever they are and get that up into the lower atmosphere or whatever it is. It looks like it's in space. That's the next viral thing you could do.
That's a really good idea. A colleague of mine just showed me her picture up in outer space or near space.
Yeah?
And yeah, I got to do that.
You have to. People love that sort of thing. I'd love to see that. FrankWhiteAuthor.com. And the book now you can find at Amazon, The Cosmo Hypothesis, Space Philosopher. Frank White, thank you so much for joining us here on KMOX.
Thank you, Ryan. It's been a pleasure. Mm.
Love talking space. All right, coming up the next hour, you may have missed it, some clips from President Trump. He was on Sean Hannity's program and an education commissioner over in Kentucky saying that, ooh, you should be fined for taking sick days. Ooh, how about that? It's Overnight America.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.